website to see that.
All right, will you hold on, Roland, for just a second, all right?
I will, Tom.
All right, Roland Schwinn, our first guest, is on the line, and I was just talking to him. He is a interesting guy, a nationally syndicated talk show host. He does a radio show for Canada. He's on about 25 stations in Canada, and he has an interesting Canadian perspective on the presidential election here in the United States. We'll talk to him in a moment. It's Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. And we've made $32,618.50 with the sale of the Best of the Phil Hendry Show Year 2000 CD and LP. LP, picture disc, long-playing picture disc that we have for sale. That's a limited edition. It's going to come to you signed. They're taking orders now, and we'll be shipping those out as soon as we actually get the sleeve signed for them. If you'd like, you can order it at 877-616-7445. The CD is $20, $3.50 shipping and handling. And the LP is $40, $3.50 shipping and handling. So remember, our payments are Visa, MasterCard, personal check, fast, courteous, and professional staff there to take your order. And remember, it all goes to my friend's place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. $32,618 so far made with the sale of the number one rated Phil Hendry Show Best of the Year 2000 CD and picture disc. Also, we have a huge announcement that'll be coming up within the next couple of weeks. The Phil Hendry Show, the most inventive, creative radio show on the dial in America today, true to the pioneer spirit of this program, true to the daring spirit of this show, we will take a giant step in the history of this medium very soon, and we will tell you exactly what that is within the next couple of weeks right here on the Phil Hendry Show. A giant step. We're very happy to bring it to you, but then what other show would but ours? So stay tuned for that. It's going to be exciting. 1-800-449-8686 is our number. Peter Jennings on Sunday night apparently grimaced or made some facial face that got some people upset. Allegedly, during George W. Bush's acceptance speech or speech relative to the certification of the vote in Florida, when he was accepting the presidency, so to speak, saying that the vote was certified in Florida and that he was the president of the United States and he was going to move on with his transition, apparently Peter Jennings grimaced or otherwise made a face. And that was kind of an interesting moment. And Jennings said that, let's see, I was struck by the fact that it was a very serious moment and we treated it accordingly, wrote Jennings. He dubbed it the eye of the beholder syndrome. Jennings compared the situation to a time that a professor concluded that every time President Reagan was on television, the veteran newsman smiled, that Peter Jennings smiled. So we wanted to get a broadcaster's perspective, I guess other than my own. Roland Schwinn is a nationally syndicated radio talk show host in Canada and joins us from Ottawa, Canada here this evening and this afternoon on the Phil Hendry Show. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Schwinn.
Phil, it's always my pleasure.
Tell me what you think about the role of a newsman or a journalist in objectivity and the fact that events sometimes dictate an emotional response.
That your country's journalists are very biased toward the left.
You think that our country's journalists are?
Oh, I really believe that is the case. I have, along with other Canadians, observed this for quite some time. Peter Jennings grimacing during George Bush's acceptance speech is just the most recent example. This is a disease that has its roots in an event 37 years old. And it is a disease that American journalists suffer from. In Canada and in other free countries where a free press is practiced, certainly we are taught as journalists to be as objective as we possibly can and not to betray any emotion in reporting news stories. That's why the United States is an interesting petri dish, an interesting experiment in the inability of journalists to keep their feelings out of a news story.
Well, you said that this has its roots 37 years old. I'm going to take a guess. You say that this has its roots in the Kennedy assassination?
That was the biggest single news story of the century in American, for American journalists, and I would dare say for Canadian journalists as well, and any journalist of the West who covered that story, yes.
What was it about that?
Well, I think the disease of bias has its roots in the Kennedy assassination, where Walter Cronkite, in a rare lapse of professionalism, broke down in front of millions of Americans at the news that President Kennedy was dead. Now, that was a sad moment, but Cronkite should be reporting the news and not commenting on it. And you have Walter Cronkite, you have Peter Jennings, you have other people who continually insist on pushing their feelings into a story. It's very unprofessional.
It was a very emotional... Hold on for a minute. That was Kennedy's assassinate. What Mr. Schwinn is referring to, my listeners who might be too young to know, when Walter Cronkite was on CBS in the afternoon of November the 22nd reporting the actual death of President Kennedy, he removed his glasses and he wiped a tear from his eye because he was overcome with emotion. Is that's what you're referring to?
That is what I'm referring to, Phil. And Peter Jennings grimacing during George Bush's speech. Jim McKay, who is otherwise a tremendous sports reporter in your country, all of a sudden had to get emotional when he talked about the Israelis dying at the 72 Olympics. Time and again, we see American journalists completely unable to separate their emotion from the story. And as a Canadian journalist, I look at this... Well,
is there something different that Canadians do?
Well, I can tell you, Phil, in my own experience, we are taught from that very first time that I went to journalism, and I took journalism at Hamilton College in Ontario, I learned that objectivity was the number one the number one attribute that a journalist should have. Now, I was a young reporter in Edmonton, Alberta, and a young girl had fallen through a crack in the ice of a local lake, and was frozen solid, and I will tell you, even as they pulled the block of ice out of the lake that contained that girl's body, I was completely objective. I never smiled. I didn't crack any jokes. I didn't laugh. Nothing. And her mother was right next to me, bawling her eyes out.
And So what are you saying? You're saying that you...
In my experience, and I have almost 18 years of experience as a major journalist in Canada, that I learned... Objectivity was number one.
And are you saying that American journalists are not taught that?
Apparently, either American journalists are not taught that, which I know is not the case, because I'm familiar that at least a few schools of journalism teach objectivity, but they don't know how to be.
And you're using an example. You were reporting...
That was when I was a very young reporter as well.
A girl drowned in a lake. She was frozen into a block of ice. They pull it out, and you were objective.
I was completely objective. But you put Peter Jennings on that. You put Walter Cronkite on that. They're blubbering, and all of this. This is why so many people are completely, especially those of us who live outside the United States, why we are completely stunned at your presidential process and the lack of objectivity and professionalism. Everything has to be bawling your eyes out. Everybody's crying, and that's where we find fault. I think those of us in the international journalistic. But here in Canada, we don't do that. Because we observe an objective standard.
Well, you are awfully critical here, Roland, with American press. You're bringing up Peter Jennings grimacing, Walter Cronkite crying after Kennedy's assassination.
I'll give you an example. When Ronald Reagan was shot, okay?
Yeah.
Did Walter Cronkite cry?
I don't know.
Well, I can tell you the answer. No, he didn't. So his liberal bias had him crying when Kennedy was shot, and you'd think that common decency would dictate that he would bawl like a baby when Reagan was shot. But he didn't do it.
Well, what do you mean, common decency?
I'm saying journalistic objectivity. If you're going to cry during Kennedy's assassination, you could cry when Reagan got shot. Neither thing, that did not happen. Peter Jennings grimacing, and the idea that I was told that some journalists actually started crying when the Challenger blew up. This is the time when...
You're mentioning some very emotional moments in the history of this country. The blowing up of the Challenger, Kennedy being assassinated.
But you don't want to see a reporter cry. And you don't want to see Peter Jennings break through that objectivity as well, Phil. And that's really the heart and soul of what I'm talking about.
All right, Roland Schwinn is my guest. He's a talk show host from Canada. And he says that Jennings grimacing during George Bush's acceptance speech is just another example of the inability of American journalists to be objective. He uses as the classic example Walter Cronkite crying when Kennedy was assassinated. He said that that was a lapse of professionalism that has infected American journalism ever since. Our number is 1-800. Of course, the thing that he said about, well, he cried when Kennedy was shot, but he didn't bawl when Reagan got shot, which proves the liberal bias. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. One 800 449 8686. Phil Hendry Show. I'm on the line with Roland Schwinn, Canadian radio talk show host, commenting on the professionalism or lack thereof of American journalists reporting on the election. Some of whom may not have the objectivity that you're claiming that Canadians have, Mr. Schwinn. Correct?
Phil, I'm not saying that we are the end all be all of journalists, but I think Canadian journalists understand what it is to be objective as well as respectful, and we're not blubbering like children.
You keep talking about blubbering. You mean when Kennedy was assassinated? Cronkite crying?
Well, all I'm saying, Phil, is that we need to have an objectivity that I think that I can bring to my profession, like I did after that girl was drowned.
Well, you said you weren't cracking jokes, but I hardly think that that's the moment to crack jokes. But then,
well, you're not a newsman, though, Phil.
No, you're right. I am not a journalist. I'm more along the entertainment line. Let me take some phone calls for Roland Schwinn, talk show host. This is Gulfport, Florida. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, sir.
I just cannot understand his logic. I mean, doesn't he have any emotion? How do you differentiate? Here's a man who's talking about a girl taken out of a river in a block of ice, and he didn't tell any jokes. You know, he must have ice water in his veins. I'm just shocked.
Well, I'd like to respond to that. I'm not saying that I am without emotion. I'm saying that there is a job to do. And the job is to objectively report the events as they are transpiring. I'm very proud of that. I'm sorry that the child, I can't remember right now her name, but I'm sorry that she was dead. But I was able to watch them slide that block of ice right across in front of me, and I didn't crack one joke.
Why would you crack a joke in a situation like that? I don't understand your logic. Don't you
have
any feelings? I mean, you cannot criticize our Walter Cronkites, any of our top journalists.
Well,
They got it across, and believe me, Canadians are the most warm-hearted neighbors we can have, but
thank you
are
much.
The coldest individual I have ever come across.
Well,
I
do not
see your logic, and I think you better change your ways.
Well, sir, I'm a radio talk show host now in Canada. I have
I'm not impressed with your attitude.
I'm also very conservative.
I'm not impressed with your ad. You cannot criticize our top jury because
Cronkite is good. I'm just saying he's not great. And I'm saying
Wait a minute. Walter Cronkite is considered to be the standard of...
Well, he may well be for you.
For
but
us.
I'm talking about Canada now. And I'm talking about an objective journalistic standard in Canada whereby I could see a man cut in half with a chainsaw and be completely objective.
Well,
what is that supposed to mean?
It means that I've got to file that story.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Schwinn. You see somebody get run over by a car, and they need immediate medical attention. Are you going to file the story, or are you going to call 911?
You're not going to like my answer.
What is your answer?
My first duty is to file the story.
Oh, my God, I can't
accept that. I have to get the information to you. I have to get you the information that someone just got crushed.
That's great. Thank you for getting me that information. And if the guy dies in the process?
There's a little term that we use in French Canada. It's called c'est la vie. Do you know what that means?
I know what it means.
What does it mean?
C'est la vie. Goodbye and good luck.
There you go. Guy gets rolled over by a truck,
And it's, c'est la vie means that's life.
How about I'll try to get an interview with the victim.
So in other words, you would go up with a microphone while the guy's been run over by a truck.
And try to get an interview, yes. That's the first duty of a newsman, at least news people in Canada.
And I don't, well, you know, for our Walter Cronkite.
Oh, he's a baby.
Tom Brokaw.
Tom Brokaw.
And I love the Canadians, but you shock. I'm shocked by your attitude. You mean to
I'm
say
a journalist,
you would do reporting before calling 911?
You'd call it. Did you hear the question?
What?
He asked, are you going to file that story and interview that victim before you call 911?
All I want to get is a comment, then I'll call 911. I'll give you an example. There was a bar fight in Calgary, Canada, when I was a young reporter. Somebody got shot in the belly. So I walked up to him and I said, you just got shot with a 45. Does it hurt?
And okay, and then what?
Then I called.
You called what?
I called 911.
You just got shot in the belly with a 45. Does it hurt?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Americans could learn an awful lot from Canadian broadcasters.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Oh, just a minute. I think you've got that.
All right. Thank you for your call, sir. We're going to move on.
Come on.
Goodbye.
St. Petersburg on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Yeah. I'm a Canadian. I'm from the East Coast of Canada. I live in St. Petersburg, Florida now. Roland, I would just like to congratulate you on getting onto an American entertainment show and publicizing yourself and jumping on
the American bandwagon of
being very controversial and doing it the American way. And
I will tell you that
one,
I'm not trying to be controversial.
Excellent approach.
I'm not trying to be controversial. What I am trying to
controversial points.
Well, I'm trying to give them an education.
Years, and I can certainly understand. I do appreciate American journalism. It's competitive, and I don't mind anybody crying when an incredibly emotional event occurs.
Wait,
it
that
shows
is not
that
objective.
You're human, you have
no.
emotions. I still think
that's
you're able
not
to objectively report
that's not
the news
reporting.
Even and be emotional at the same time.
That's not objective reporting.
Good for you for taking up the American way
and
promoting yourself.
I'm not taking up the American way. You talk a lot for a Canadian.
Pardon me?
I said you talk a lot for a Canadian.
Well, I've been here for 5 years.
Well, that
so
must
one,
be it,
one
yeah.
has to assimilate
so
themselves to an
say,
environment.
First of all...
Okay, well, what is the point?
The point that I'm trying to make is very simply this. Peter Jennings, Walter Cronkite, they all make faces, they all cry, they're all, like, commenting on the story. We don't do that in Canada.
No, what you do is you walk up to a guy who's been shot with a 45 and go, hey, does it hurt?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm giving you the digested version of that.
Well, I think
and then you call 911.
That's
correct. Watch CBC or CTV, and they turn away pretty quickly from that incredibly boring, blank-faced, unemotional level of reporting.
I happen to be very telegenic.
I'm fighting about it. I realize it's objective.
I'm very telegenic, though, so people don't mind looking at me. I have a very telegenic and authoritarian face, so people don't mind looking at me.
All right, so in other words, in Canada, you guys are really objective, and down here in the United States, people are bawling.
They're bawling a lot, yeah. And the whole grimacing of the face and everything else tightens my jaws.
Here is St. Louis on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
I think he's doing his job and being very controversial, but he's showing his liberal bias also. As he's not objective. Just because Walter Cronkite called has nothing in
Walter
the world
Cronkite didn't
to do
call,
with
he cried.
Bias.
He didn't call, he cried. And I think that Walter Cronkite might have cried when Ronald Reagan was shot, too. But he didn't, did he? No. He cried only when Kennedy was shot. And there is Peter Jennings grimacing when Bush wins. But if Gore won, maybe he'd have an erection. We don't know that...
Okay, well, we don't have...
Well, we don't know, do we? We have to guess.
Yeah, but we don't have to use those kinds of comparisons and metaphors. Okay, so Peter Jennings grimaced during Bush's acceptance speech, and he says that's not objective, and he also says that that's just the way American journalists are. Bawling when Kennedy gets shot, crying when the Israeli athletes got killed, the Challenger blows up, they're bawling. I guess, you know what, I really ought to ask him. Mr. Schwinn, are you there?
Yes, sir.
What about when the Hindenburg blew up?
That guy was a baby.
The guy who said, oh, the humanity.
Yes.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. And we'll be back with more from Roland Schwinn on The Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
camera.
1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. We're talking to Roland Schwinn, a nationally syndicated radio talk show host from Canada. We're talking to him on the line from Ottawa, Canada this evening. And we're talking about Peter Jennings grimacing and showing these facial expressions when George Bush essentially accepted the presidency of the United States on Sunday night. You say that that is liberal bias.
Oh, it is absolute liberal bias. And the entire United States media, the entire broadcast media of the United States is guilty of liberal bias.
And you're a conservative.
That is correct.
How do we know we're not conservative? You say you're a conservative, but you are objective.
Absolutely objective, Phil.
All right. There's a news story that you were involved in, and that was a school bus? So this is back when you were working as a print reporter, right?
Phil, I was a print reporter in Calgary, Canada, in the latter part of the 1980s. And at that time, I saw a school bus with some 50 children on board crash through a fence on a 200-foot-high elevated bridge and sail. It must have taken a good 20 seconds for it to hit the bottom of the ravine and burst into flames. As difficult as it was for me to do, I got my camera out of my car, I put a telephoto lens on, all of which took probably 15 seconds.
And meanwhile, kids are burning to death down there.
Hold on for a minute, Phil. You see, because you make the mistake that a lot of people make. You won't listen.
You got your camera out of your car.
Yes. And I got some of the best shots. Now, you may think that's wrong.
Yes, I do.
Well, you're not a reporter. I am.
I think the first thing you could have done was gotten on the phone and called 911.
I did do that, Phil. But a reporter's first job is to get the story and get it objectively. And the only way you can be objective is after you see a school bus filled with kindergartners explode into an orange ball of flame, get some good shots. Then you'll know that you're objective. And I got a great shot of this Asian kid. Well, I guess...
Yeah, I would rather not hear about it.
All right, I'm sorry. What?
What? I'm sick to my stomach, okay?
Phil, I'm a reporter. You're not. That's the hardball world of news reporting.
1-800. But you're calling Cronkite a crybaby because he cries when Kennedy died? You're calling all these people crybabies when a Challenger blows up?
You know who ought to be able... You know who should cry is me. I should have gotten a Pulitzer for that Asian kid shot. But did I? I didn't. And I'm not bawling about it.
Here is New Jersey. New Jersey on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, sir.
Man, this guy really needs to lighten up. When was the last time a rocket crashed and Canada even launched a rocket where anybody died on it? When was the last time
I need to lighten up. I'm objective. American journalists need to lighten up. But instead they're bawling and crying. They drop to their knees and weep.
Then listen. And as far as the grimacing on TV, that's really not his fault. As far as the cameraman shouldn't have showed that. Okay.
Shouldn't have showed that. What is that supposed to mean?
Hold up. If you were a cameraman, would you show a shot with Barbara Waters scratching her breast?
I would show a shot of you scratching your crotch if you were the president of the United States.
But you work for the news company. What's better for the news company? You don't show a guy do that, knowing there might be some
better for the news company.
I'm sure he's
talking about
the camera.
The objective of coverage of news. And what Mr. Jennings should not have done is grimaced because he's liberal, and he grimaced because he doesn't like the idea that George Bush comes from Texas, and is probably a very strong, forceful leader, and not a liberal.
When was the last time somebody was assassinated in Canada, besides a moose walking down Main Street?
Besides a what, sir?
A moose walking down Main Street. That's the last thing a person that was probably assassinated in Canada.
That passes for American humor, too, doesn't it?
Pardon me?
A moose walking down Main Street. Well, ha, 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 ha. Isn't that funny?
Well, listen,
you know,
Dudley.
I think you're an ambulance chaser. An ambulance chaser.
Yes, I think you just. I mean, there is a thing of humanity. for you to, for the guy to get shot in the stomach, you need an eye for the guy.
Yeah, that was the part. And by the way, hold on. I don't want to hear any more Amos and any of that stuff.
Well, he called me Dudley.
Well, all right. You walked up to a guy.
Oh, that's okay. Is that right?
No, I want to get this clear. You walked up to a man who had just been shot in the gut. And you,
I was curious. He'd been shot with a 45. I wanted to know if it hurt.
Of course it's going to hurt.
Exactly.
In the gut? A
could
gunshot?
You offer the guy your shirt to pack the wound or anything? No.
You're shooting
and
the guy with a 20.
Call 911. You even, if you were, tell you what, if you were a lawyer, before you even called 911, I bet you'd be handing out business cards to kids on burning buses and stuff
I
like
have
that.
To be objective in covering the news. Now, I was sorry to see that bus crash. I didn't cause it to crash. At least I hope I didn't cause it to crash. It was a very icy day. But I'm sure, and I have gone through my heart and through my soul and my conscience, I know that I didn't cause that bus to go off the road.
Now,
well, why are you saying, wait a minute, why,
me wonder.
Why are you saying that?
Exactly, you make me wonder.
Makes you wonder about what?
And he, I mean, why would you even mention that? It wasn't your fault. Are you trying to, like...
No,
like,
sir, I'm saying that there was contact between the bus and my...
Are you trying to make your conscience feel better?
What I'm saying is there was contact between the car and my bus, but I know
oh,
it...
Oh, my goodness, did you tell anybody that?
Well, tell who? I have a job to do.
No, did you tell the authorities that you came in contact?
With the bus?
Yes.
No, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I'll tell you why. It was a red. It was a green light, and the bus didn't take off. I accelerated, and I hit it slightly. That had nothing to do with it going off the bridge.
How do you know?
Because it slid for about 20 feet, but stopped before it hit the rail.
I'm going to track the trailer right now. I'll pull it over so I can be safe, okay? Let me tell you something. You know how long it takes to stop a tractor trailer when you come in contact or when you have to actually stop? It takes about 100 to 300 yards.
Whoa, wait a minute. What are you accusing me of?
What are you trying to help your conscience with?
I want you to tell me right now what you're accusing me of.
I'll tell you what I'm accusing you of.
What?
I say you hit that bus and you made it slid off the road so you could get some good shots.
Well, now I've heard it all.
No, I've
heard it all.
That's what I think. I think you hit that bus and made it go off that bridge. What year was this?
I'm not going to tell you.
I demand that you tell me what year it was.
I won't say it.
Hey, well, I can find out.
Call the authorities, and I will get in touch with somebody down there if I were you, because I'm telling you, you need to be investigated. Just because it's not your fault does not make you where you shouldn't have any kind of, nothing should be said about it. They could have blamed that on that bus driver, okay, saying that, oh, they must have been drinking. They must
Let
have
me ask you a question. I got a great question for you.
Go
in
ahead.
Vietnam, a photographer took a picture of a monk who had set himself on fire as a protest to the Vietnam War. Was he supposed to get a bucket of water first? Before he took the picture? No. He got a great shot of that guy. He was like a human Roman candle. And I'll tell you something.
That's a totally different situation.
Well,
for him to run up...
And furthermore,
he's going to take his life into his hand.
I drive trucks and I don't report the news. Because guess what?
That made the cover of Life magazine.
I have too much heart not to help somebody when they're in pain. Let me tell you something. You think he's going... I mean, just because he stops burning, if you put the guy out, maybe he'll actually talk to you. But no, the guy let him burn, right? Let's guess that's why I
am simply saying to you, if you put the man out with a bucket of water, yes, he may give you a comment. Look, I thought that my .45 caliber had the safety on when the guy in the bar got shot. And what I'm saying is...
Now you're telling me that two news events that you were involved in, you caused.
No, I did not.
You just said the .45 you thought had the safety on, and you also said that you hit the bus.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, you know something? Both of you guys, you're Americans, is that right?
I'm an American, yeah.
I'm a human.
But you come from America?
Huh?
Do you come from America?
I come from my mother.
Screw,
and you
want to
keep taking it
well,
back?
Then listen to this. Screw both of you.
Oh, he hung up. He hung up.
Hello?
Yes, sir, I'm right here. The gentleman hung up on us.
I know, man. I couldn't believe this guy. I can't believe it. I heard it all. Man,
well, I think that somebody...
You know what? If we'd have talked to him any longer, we probably would have found out that he shot Kennedy.
Yeah, probably, or at least he thought he did.
You know, I can't believe this.
All right, sir, thank you.
He didn't even report it. All right, thanks for listening. This is my first time calling.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Maybe he did shoot. Was that... Nah. 1-800-44... Was that Tommy Lee Jones? Okay, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show. Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. You know, we were talking about journalists being objective, and then somebody, you know, I think it was Mr. Schwinn, our guest this hour, who said, well, you know, when those monks set themselves on fire in Vietnam, I think some guy ran over with a bucket of water to put them out. Those dudes got, you know, they took their picture, right? And what we're talking about is during the Vietnam War, at the, I don't know what point of the war this was. I think it was like just prior to American, really heavy American involvement. In South Vietnam, in Saigon, there were Buddhist monks on a regular basis setting themselves on fire in the middle of streets down there. They would just sit down, douse themselves with gasoline, and set themselves on fire. Every week there'd be a new monk going up. You know, the guy'd say, we got to get another, we got another monk going up next week, man. And so what, are you going to go over there with a bucket of water? See, that's the other side of that. Why, if I saw crime being committed and I saw human suffering, I'd do... Oh, really? You know, sometimes you just in life you have to step back and watch the insanity. There's nothing you can do. What do? Just kick back and watch a monk BQ. A monk BQ? A monk BQ. Oh, man. But that's what was going down. You can't intercede in every one of life's problems. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't get involved. Why, just today, at a gas station, I was pumping gas into my car. What do I hear behind me? Suddenly, I hear gasoline being spilled onto the pavement. I turn around, and I see a lady who's in her car behind me, and she's been gassing up, and suddenly the gas is spilling out of her gas tank. It's spilling out of the nozzle of the hose. It's going all over the concrete, and she's whimpering. She's, you know, and I'm like, Jesus, I guess I better do something. That's what you do. You go into that mode. So I walk over there. I put my cigarette out and I walk over there. I'm just kidding. I wasn't smoking. I walked over and I said to her, are you OK? And she's, oh, God, oh. I said, OK, well, look, you know, turn it off. She was able to turn the thing off. I thought there was something wrong with her. When I thought about it later on, she was still squeezing the handle as the gas was pouring out. I said, okay, put that thing back. And I put the cap back into her car for her. And she's, oh, you know, she was really basically just whimpering up to this point. And I think I got some in my eye. She said, I got it all over me, and I think I got some in my eye. Do you think I should tell someone? Suddenly I was like thinking, God, I'm dealing with sort of a woman child here. You know, she's... You know, she's like 39 going on 12, or I'm not trying to put her down. I guess she was scared. And I said, yeah, go in. There's people in the service bay over there. You should tell those guys because I know they're in charge of the gas pump here. And as the gasoline spilled out around me, and as I saw one of the delivery trucks pull in and a guy smoking a big fat Winston, I thought, I got to get out of here. And I got in my car and I split. So anyway... No, I mean, there wasn't a guy smoking a Winston. It was just, there was a lot of gasoline. And what are you going to do? I'm going to stand there and make sure she's okay? I got places to go and people to see. I got to bug out. It wasn't a life-threatening thing. I don't think anybody's going to die. But I'll tell you something else. If I see a monk BQ going on, I ain't going to run up with a can of I may run up with a can of gas, but not with a bucket of water. I see a monk BQ, Jim, I'm putting a marshmallow on a stick and I'm running over. He put him out. Look, that the point being that, and I'm sure we've all you know, considered this. There are some things in life you can't really, honest to swear to God, can't do anything about. Everybody wants to be a hero. Everybody fantasizes about being a hero. Nobody, I don't think there's anybody within the sound of my voice that hasn't fantasized at one time or another. They're you know, they've saved the day, you know? Especially when you read about a lot of the crap that goes on in the world, you want to be the guy who was there to have stopped it. You know what I'm saying? Well, guess what? You know, it's happening. But by the same token, maybe these guys could do something. You know, like Sam Kinison's old bit about, you know, you see these starving, hungry kids. Maybe the guy who had the camera was taking the picture of the starving kids could have given them a sandwich. Well, the same thing with these, you know, problems that go on. But by the same token, you know, you're in the middle of Saigon or you're in a third world city and everybody is running around with, you know, their turbans are unwinding and there's all kinds of hell is breaking loose and who knows what, you know, a riot's about to break out in the West Bank. What are you going to do? You're going to run in and stop it? My brother-in-law was just on the West Bank, like, oh, I don't know, last summer. Before all this crap really started getting heavy. But he was traveling throughout Europe, and he went down into Africa, and he actually climbed up Kilimanjaro. Did I ever tell this story? The story about him going up Kilimanjaro was nuts. It was nuts. But anyway, he was in the West Bank, and he said, well, I got out of there. I said, why? He says, well, a riot was about to start. He's like, every day a freaking riot's going to start over there. What am I going to do, go over there and chill it out? He said, I'm out of there. I said, how are the Palestinians? He said, they're nice people. They're nice folks. He said, the Jews were great people. The Israelis, great people. But whatever, you know, I ain't hanging around. I'm going to stand there with both my arms out at either side saying, now, now, now. How about a drink? Anyway, he goes down to Kilimanjaro. He got a guide. You know, they got these lodges along the base of Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. You can go there. And much like there are lodges in any American forest, any American national park, there are lodges, I believe it's Kenya, that are at the base of Mount Kilimanjaro. And they're populated with people who are there primarily to climb the mountain or some portion of it. And they're those kind of African lodges that one imagines from, you know, from a John Huston film, you know, the White Hunter Black Heart thing. I'm sure they've got some bear paw or some lion's head that they use as an ashtray or something. So he's there, and they split, and they take off. I think it took him about 7 days to go. I don't quote me, but it took him a while to get up this thing. Well, the final night, they began their climb at 11 o'clock at night. So they had pitched a camp at about 1,500 feet below the top of Kilimanjaro. And at 11 o'clock that night, they began their final assault, hoping to make the top of Kilimanjaro by sunup, so they could see the sun rising over the African Serengeti. It would be really, you know, kind of a righteous thing to see. So he says, geez, I couldn't believe it. I said, what? He says, I didn't have any hiking equipment. I thought they were going to take us up because apparently there's a route you can go up Kilimanjaro that's relatively safe and fairly easy to climb. In other words, you could do it in a pair of regular boots and you wouldn't even have to be roped. In fact, I think there's a way you can ascend the Himalayas that way, but you have to go up the, Mount Everest, but you have to go up the Chinese side. And the Chinese, I think, have closed it off. They won't let you do it. But in any event, he's going up the final 1,500 feet of Kilimanjaro at a 90-degree angle on an ice-faced mountain, on a glacier, with no rope, with no real boots. The guide, and you have to go up with a guide, some guide that they hired, is chipping steps out for them in the ice as they're going up. He said he could hear a rock fall, and it would be one of those things where you could hear the rock bounce once, bounce twice, and then, like, it just sails off into the abyss. And Kilimanjaro is, what, 19,000 feet? So the guy's at about 17-something, 17,000 feet up. If he would have slipped, you would have heard bounce once, bounce twice, and then, yeah. And they finally make the top of this thing around sunrise, and the guide says to him, you throw up, you feel better. Because he was sick to his stomach, and he was really angry at this guy for having taken him up the side of this mountain with no rope, no boots, no nothing, going up 90-degree angle. He can hear rocks going click, click, and then, you know. I mean, the guy is hanging off the edge of the world up there. And he finally gets to the top, and the guy said he was angry, and he was feeling sick, and the air is really thin. The guy says, you throw up, you feel better. He said, I puked, and sure enough, it felt great. And then we all took a group picture and had a beer and started back down. Took them like 7 days to get to the top. Took them a day to get down. Because they caught a bus up there. Okay. Because they had a tour bus waiting for them. And the really easy way down. Those people who've taken the easy way up, they were going the easy way down. Anyway, 1-800-449-8686. So I'm trying to talk Maria into going there with me. But she don't like Africa. I don't know, I wonder why. It's the Phil Henry Show.